Welcome to the Pumps and Systems Podcast. This episode is presented by SEPCO. SEPCO, designing and manufacturing world-class fluid sealing systems and solutions for mechanical seals and bearing protection to pump and valve packing. If it's fluid sealing, SEPCO's got it. Contact SEPCO for all your sealing needs at 800-633-4770 or email info@sepco.com. Look them up on the web at sepco.com. Welcome to this edition of the Pumps and Systems Podcast. I'm your host, Drew Champlin. Did you know that according to the World Health Organization UNICEF JMP reports, 4.5 billion people lack safely managed sanitation services, and they estimate that every year 361,000 children under the age of five die due to diarrhea caused by poor sanitation and contaminated water. Here we're going to talk to Mark Hassman of Crane Engineering. Crane Engineering was awarded a $4.2 million grant by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to advance development of a mobile septic treatment system, which will process human fecal sludge into non-potable water for agricultural or industrial use. And the goal of the project is to create a pathogen-killing human waste treatment system that is viable in areas such as dense urban settlements where poor sanitation poses the greatest risks to human health. And Hassman and some members of Crane Engineering, along with members from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, went to Africa last year, went to Ghana and Uganda to see the problem. And here, Mark will talk to me about that. So let's get to it. So, Mark, just kind of tell me, how long have you been at Crane Engineering? What all have you been doing there?
So I started basically a year ago, just for this project. So I lead this project. When I came from Kimberly-Clark. I was there for, 27 years. So I had 30 years of tissue and towel making experience. And when Lance Crane, the CEO of Crane Engineering, found out about this project, he contacted me, and so we were talking about it for a while, and then when it actually happened, I just couldn't say no. It was just a great opportunity.
Okay, sounds good. So are you a Packers fan or a University of Wisconsin fan or either or?
Well, on Saturday I bleed Badger Red, and on Sunday I bleed Packer Green. So, yep.
Perfect, perfect. Okay. Well, getting back to the project a little bit, just from what you know, and you said you've just been there for a year for the project, where did the passion for this come from? How long has this been in the works?
Yeah, so there's two sides of this. So my personal passion started probably 9 or 10 years ago. My family and I lived in England for 2 years, and the church we went to took a missions trip to Swaziland. They were connected with a community center there, and they needed some repairs. So 45 of us from the church flew down there and spent a week at this community center. And actually, it was a pretty nice town that we were in. It was an old mining town, so there was pretty good infrastructure there. But the community center needed some work. One of the jobs we had was to fix and remodel their bathroom. So it was a little building on top of this little mound. And one of the jobs was that it didn't drain well. And so to walk in there, they had to walk through the nasties to get to the toilets. And so one of my jobs was to chip a drainage ditch so that it would drain better. And I remember being in full PE on my knees. You know, I was on wood, so it's all safe and everything. And these little kids, happy as could be, I mean, they were so short, they looked me right in the eye as they walked by when I'm kneeling down, and just happy as could be walking barefoot through this to go to the bathroom. And that image stuck with me for a long time. And then when we came back from that trip, the church asked me to, share our learnings and everything at a service. And I remember closing that no kid should ever have to live this way. And so, I didn't, that was it. I thought that was, the trip of a lifetime. My kids to this day will tell you that's one of their favorite trips. And then when this opportunity came up, I couldn't say no.
Okay.
So that's my personal passion.
Yeah.
I think from a crane standpoint, there was a technology that the foundation wanted to build a prototype to test, and so a crane was found via the internet, I think, and to build it. And when they built it and started processing, the foundation asked if they would be interested in continuing the development for that technology. And so that's when Lance got a hold of me, and we started doing some serious talking. So it was great.
Okay. Yeah, obviously the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation awarded you guys the $4.2 million grant to advance the development of this. So we're recording this in mid-July, obviously. So when did you start officially? Was that this time last year?
Yeah, July 1st. And one of the first things they did, the foundation did, was send a team to Africa. And they called it an Africa learning experience. So there was four people from Crane and four people from a company called JSA. And they were from Washington State. And they've helped us do the development of this technology. So, you know, initially we were to further develop the technology we were given. But we were a little skeptical of it, so simultaneously we started looking at other technologies and other things we could do, which was a good thing because eventually we proved that technology wouldn't fit the requirements, but at the same time we had another solution that everyone was excited to start working on. And so that Africa learning trip was pivotal. I mean, it was just, we got to see things that I wish I could take all Americans and show them how other people live, because it was heart-changing.
Okay. Can you kind of, I know you guys were there, what, around 9 or 10 days, is that right?
Yeah, yep, 10 days, I think. And I wrote a blog every night, we got back from dinner or whatever, to kind of, recap the day and share with the broader Crane team here. And, since then, we've used it as a good communication tool of what we're trying to do and the environment we're trying to get our technology to work in, and just the overall sanitation crisis that I don't think people are aware of.
Absolutely. And the blog, mstscrane.wordpress.com, also linked on craneengineering.net, you guys' website. And I always ask this whenever people go to a different country, but what was the flight schedule that you guys used to fly into? I believe it was Uganda first and then Ghana, or am I missing
first,
that at all?
Yeah,
right.
Well, Ghana was first, and I think we had three flights, maybe four. I can't remember exactly, but it was a long trip. And, once we got to Ghana and we spent several days there, we had to fly to Uganda, and I think that was like a five-hour flight. So people don't realize, it's like going from the East Coast to the West Coast in the United States, and we were going from, like, the West Coast to, like, the center of Africa. So it's a big continent.
Right. And had you been to Africa since that first trip you made about 10 years ago to Swaziland?
No. This was the second and only trip. I'm going to go probably, this process that we're working on, if it's successful, we'll take it to Africa and test it there next year. So we're all hoping that everything goes well this fall.
Okay, sounds good. Tell me, what were some eye-opening experiences you had there? Just starting when you first got there, I'm sure you had your expectations and you probably had some things you thought it would look like, you thought you would see, but what really stood out to you?
Well, the foundation had a great schedule of events. When we got there, we didn't have a lot of free time. I mean, they let us adjust to the time zone and everything for a day, but, they had scheduled meetings with sanitation people in government. They scheduled tours of wastewater treatment plants. There's very few of them, but the ones that existed, we got the tour. We met with several different pit emptying associations. So kind of the background is 27% of the world population actually has a sewer pipe and their waste gets taken away and treated. So 3/4 of the world's population doesn't have what we have in the United States. And a lot of those people live where water is scarce, I think. There's one estimate that by 2030, 74% of the world's population is going to live where water is scarce. So you put water scarcity, non-sewered living conditions or sanitation, and it's a huge crisis, and especially in these, they call them settlements. So basically they're densely populated areas of very poor people who have one reason or another migrated to this area, and they don't have very good living conditions. They don't have pipes for water. They don't have sewer systems like we do. And typically there's a lot of outhouses, as we know them in the States, and that's what they use if they have access to them. Sometimes they don't have access, and they just do what they call open defecation, which a lot of the governments are trying to make illegal. But if they do have this outhouse, then that's where they go. But when the outhouse fills up, you know, there's a pit underneath it, and when that fills up, it has to be emptied. And in an ideal world, there's a vacuum truck that comes along and sucks it out, kind of like they do our septic tanks in the U.S. Like if you live out in a rural area, you have a septic tank, it's no big deal. They come, they pump it out, they take it to the treatment plant, it gets mixed with everything else and treated. Well, in these developing countries, these settlements, they're so dense, you can't get big trucks back into these areas. There's very few roads and stuff. So it's hard to get access to all these outhouses. And the majority of the waste from these actually doesn't make it to a treatment plant. It just gets dumped out. And sometimes they'll let it dry and then burn it with solid waste. Most often than not, they'll just empty it, and then the rain will take it downstream. And that's where all the disease and the contact with the pathogens occurs, when it just goes out into the environment. So our mission is to develop a processor that can go pit to pit, so it's got to be small, and it can treat the waste from these pits. And how we think we can make it a viable business for someone is if right now the vacuum truck guy, his biggest cost is diesel. And because there are so few treatment plants in these big cities, he has to make, he maybe can fit one trip in from the neighborhood to the treatment plant because it's so far away. Might be like two-hour drive through this traffic and through the city to get to the treatment plant. So he can maybe only do one truckload a day. Our process is going to treat the waste so that 80% of it is safe, and we can discharge it in a ditch or in a field or use it for some other purpose. And then that 20% that's left over that's harmful goes in that truck. So now instead of taking five trucks, he can process the same amount with just one truck. And so he'll be able to save more money, or, you know, his operation will be much more efficient so that he can make more money. Maybe it can make it lower the price so more people can afford it, and we can prevent a lot of this stuff from going out into the environment.
As far as the weather down in Africa this time of year, I mean, what was that like, and how much would, if it's too hot or whatever down there, I mean, that's got to make things even worse, I would imagine, for whatever problems they have with wastewater, with sewage and all that.
Yeah, it wasn't too hot. It was probably 80 to 85 degrees Fahrenheit, and the weather was pretty reasonable. We wore long sleeve, lightweight shirts for mosquito protection and all that. It was really nice. Actually, we had one day off. We had Sunday off, and we went and did some sightseeing. We went and saw the source of the Nile River, and that was very exciting. And then we saw a tropical forest with a bunch of different kinds of monkeys and stuff like that. So that was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. What were the biggest differences or between Ghana and Uganda when you got from one end to the other?
Well, so these settlements that we went into to see, the outhouses, if you will, and the pits and stuff like that, they were pretty much the same. They were a lot of poverty, a lot of people living on top of each other, and usually not in the best, most desirable land. So I think more background on these settlements is when there's land that gets flooded during the rainy season, it's not really worth anything. You can't build buildings there, you can't grow crops. And what happens is these people come and migrate and they settle on these and they become squatters. And so that's good and bad. They have a place to live, but then in the rainy season, what happens? All that stuff gets washed downstream. And so that just aggravates the problem. When people are living rurally and they were more spread out, the environment could absorb a lot of this stuff. But now when you live on top of each other like that, the environment can't absorb it. And so there really wasn't a lot of differences in the settlements that we saw. There was one that I referenced in the blog that had the nickname of Sodom and Gomorrah, and that was really sad. The kids there, it was just a desperate situation, and through no fault of their own, these kids, they're not going to have a chance at success like anyone in the U.S. would, just because of where they were born.
Right. Again, the blog is mstscrane.wordpress.com. So many great pictures. You really feel like if you weren't part of the trip, that you were with them because of the information, the quest for worldwide sanitation. And going back to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, I mean, how vital were they? What was it like dealing with the people with this foundation in terms of this project?
Well, they've been awesome. I mean, they funded this learning trip, and that in of itself is amazing, right? That was just for our benefit, so that we could understand the situation and put some faces to the people we're trying to help. They've been completely supportive financially, resource wise. They're very well connected around the world to people working in the same space, and when we run into something, they know who to contact, and they help us with that. So it's been just a great relationship. We recently passed a milestone. So in the grant, there are several milestones that you have to prove certain things. And so in May, we went to Seattle and presented our story. And that went really well, and so we got to go to the next phase. So that was really exciting.
Okay. Tell me about the Seattle trip. What, as far as that phase of the grant, what was that all about?
Well, there are certain deliverables that are written up in the grant. And at the first critical design review, we had to prove that a technology was worth building a full-scale prototype. And so we had done enough pilot work on this new technology that justified building a full-scale prototype. So we had to present that to a technical advisory board, and some of the people on that were everybody in the room was incredibly smart, but there's a few key people that they bring in to make sure our technical approach and our results are sound, and they were all happy with that. So, it was very nerve-wracking going into that, because you could come out of that and say, great work, but thank you, it's over, or you could come out and say, yeah, you guys did great, here's some more money, keep going. And fortunately, we were in the latter, so we're going full speed ahead.
Good deal. So what phase are you on right now, and when would maybe the deadline for the end of that phase be, as much as you can explain?
Yeah, so right now we are in the process of building a full-scale prototype, and we're going to test that this fall, and we'll test it here locally in the Appleton, Kimberly, Kaukauna area, and once we, we're happy with that, we might have to rebuild it. If so, we will. If not, we might ship it somewhere else to do some testing with it. We might even ship it to Seattle to test it. And then once we get all those test results in, we get to go back to Seattle and share our learnings, and we'll recommend a path forward. And hopefully they like it, and then we get to go through the next milestone and continue on. And one of the hopeful outcome is that it works so well, we get to send it to Africa next year and test it in a city in one of the countries in Africa.
So do you see yourself making it to Africa in the next year or so when it comes to taking this back and testing it again?
I hope so. That means we made it through our next milestone. So we've actually have some people on our team that their business is taking prototypes and testing them in developing countries. And they are, you know, they've tested a lot of different things for different organizations. So they're helping us prepare for that. And we're also bringing them on board to train them about the technology and stuff so that when we go to Africa, I'll have enough people to support the testing there.
And to let everybody know, Crane Engineering is in Kimberly, Wisconsin. And Mark, I know the project has been eye-opening for you, but what about the rest of Crane Engineering and also for the community up there?
Yeah, so the people that went on the Africa learning trip, they've been affected. They've had heart changes. It's just it's been an incredible journey. The larger group at Crane, I think Crane has 90-some employees, and, you know, we shared the blog. We had several meetings where we explained the living conditions, and they've all connected personally with it. And it actually is incredible because when I ask for someone to do something, they're going to do it right away. They drop everything. It's incredible the commitment they have to this. And not only at Crane, so when we released the grant publicly, we did a public release of it. I had lots of schools and organizations call, and so I've been going out and presenting, you know, very similar to this. I show them the pictures. I show them the situation. I don't share the technology stuff, but, you know, my intent is to share with them how other people live and how lucky we have it, and to explain the broader sanitation crisis that the rest of the world is suffering from. So it's opened a lot of people's eyes. And, well, yesterday I needed some help, so I went to this company, and, you know, I said, oh, first thing I want to do is I want to give you the background of why we're doing this. And within 10, 15 minutes of hearing the story, seeing the pictures, they're like, what can we do? Let us know what we can do. And so we've had great participation. We have a lot of treatment plants in the area that let us test our equipment on their site, which it's an inconvenience to them. We got all this big equipment around, and they're just bending over backwards to help us. So it's really brought a lot of people together. They see the need, and they want to be part of the solution. It's just great to be in a position to help be a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you guys went public with this, with the awarding of the grant back on February 21st of this year. And, you know, there's some information on your website on craneengineering.net and in the blog as well from your trip last year. What have I not asked you, Mark? Is there anything else you want to add about just anything in general from what you guys are doing with this? I know you don't want to go into too many details because you're still in the works and all that, but what else would you like to add?
I think I really don't have anything to add. I think, you know, we're hopeful that this technology works. There's a lot of people with incredible experiences. We have about 20 people on our Gates team that meet probably every 4 to 6 weeks, and they're brilliant people. They've gone to schools like MIT, Berkeley, Stanford. We've got a lot of professors on our team, and it's just amazing to see the talent come together, and they're all focused on trying to help solve this problem. And it's just been an amazing journey to be able to be associated with it, and to see so many people committed to solving this crisis.
Great. Well, Mark Hassman, I really appreciate you coming on and talking with me about this, and we'll have this podcast up soon, and you know, we'll have plenty of coverage in the September issue of Pumps and Systems magazine as well.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Pumps and Systems podcast. We'd like to thank our presenting sponsor for this episode, SEPCO. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes, or if you have an Android, check us out on SoundCloud or the CastBox app. And as always, you can hear all of our podcasts on pumpsandsystems.com.